Witam Państwa.
Dzisiaj temat, który chciałem dzisiaj porozmawiać, to jest też taki bardzo, bardzo, powiedziałbym, ogólny, może troszkę nawet taki mglisty, ale trudny też temat. Jak zaplanować swoją karierę naukową? I tutaj część z Państwa, z pewnością jakaś część Państwa, chciałaby po skończeniu doktoratu zostać naukowcami. Jeśli zostajemy naukowcami, to chcielibyśmy być dobrymi naukowcami. No bo jaki sens jest być naukowcem, który nie jest dobry, prawda? Cokolwiek byśmy nie robili, to staramy się zrobić to jak najlepiej. I tutaj oczywiście wiele dróg prowadzi do Rzymu. Jest... I'm so sorry. I forget to speak English. So, a difficult topic. There are many ways of thinking about your career. If you want to become a scientist, you want to be a good scientist. There is no glory. It would be a waste of time, waste of your valuable short lives to become an average researcher. So the question is, how do you position yourself? How do you want to develop your career so that it's remarkable, so that you, at your deathbed, you have a feeling, I have accomplished something, I've done something, I've left the world a better place. And in this topic, I have recommended to you, I sent you a link, to a talk by, to a lecture by Dr. Kenneth Alden. If you watch that lecture, you kind of know his career path. It's a remarkable path. I was very impressed by that lecture. I happened to be there when I listened to the lecture. It was a revealing thing. Not that I didn't know anything. There were several good ideas that were new for me, but what I was very surprised about is the honesty with which he talked about his career. Some of the things, as you probably feel, as you know, nobody will tell you, actually, how to do things. And he was very, very frank, very honest in how he approaches that. So what I will do, we don't have enough time to watch it together. When I had 15 weeks, 3 hours, with a break in the middle, we would watch it together with the class. And in this course, we don't have the time for that. So I ask you to watch it. If you haven't watched it, I absolutely recommend it to you, at least if you treat your scientific career seriously. So it was an invited lecture in a cycle of meetings, once a month for the whole day, whole Saturday, devoted to pretty much the same thing that this seminar is devoted to, which is the skills of a scientist. The inspiration for this course is actually from that workshop. He was an invited plenary speaker. They managed to get him. He had some time, so he came there and spoke to young scientists, doctoral students, postdocs, young faculty. I was a young faculty and found it very interesting. So what is it that he said? Here are the points that I think were important in his talk. If you watched it, you know not only the point, but also the background. I will try to tell a little bit about it, just in case you had difficulty understanding him. As you know, the recording, the quality is so-so. It was an analog recording, digitized later. Also, he doesn't speak very, very clearly, so it's not easy to follow him, but it's worth it. So one of the things he said in the very beginning is, you have to decide early on in your life, in your career, that you want to become somebody. You want to make a difference. He came himself from a not too wealthy family in the Appalachian region. Appalachian region in Poland, in the US, it's, I would compare it to somewhere, I don't know, Zakarpacie, you know, rural, not very rich, not much industry, no great universities. So from there, he decided early on that he wants to make a difference in his life, and he wanted to become a scientist. So he also recommends it. I really think it's important. to have a feeling I want to accomplish something in my life. Because life is too short, it's so easy to make your life, your career, average, and you don't want it. It's too short, too valuable, too precious. You want to do something, and that's what he recommended. It's a good idea to decide what is it that you want to become. That's a very interesting idea. I definitely agree with it fully. And it doesn't have to be very specific. You don't have to say, I want to become whatever, the director of Warsaw University. That's a very specific goal, maybe too specific. But a goal saying, I want to become a professor, not too late, I want to become a professor by the age of 40, that's a reasonable goal. But many people have goals, but what he stressed in his talk is that if you have a goal, you need to draw yourself a roadmap. You need to think, talk to people, find out how to get there. There was a radio program in 1970s in Poland, 60 minut na godzinę. I think they have sometimes, they repeat it in public radio, some of the sketches from that program. There was a sketch, I forgot who the author was, but there was a family, with last name Poszeprzyński. And there was a grandfather, Poszeprzyński, played by Jan Kobuszewski, a famous actor. Is he still alive? He is dead already. Great actor, and he was playing the grandfather. And the grandfather in this sketch, he randomly would say, it would be nice to have a piece of bread with jam, and that would be so nice. Zjadłoby się chleba z dżemem, wodą popiło palce lizać. That was his kind of, if you ever heard it, you probably recognize that. It was kind of what many people do. I want to become rich. Okay, that's very nice goal. But how do you get there? How do you become rich? I want to become a professor. How do you become a professor? Absolutely. Very early on, you should find out what you need to do to get there. To become a professor, well, you need to finish a doctorate. Without it, forget it. Yes. So doctorate is the first step. Once you have a doctorate, you have to keep working, keep publishing. In Poland, you need to get the degree of doctor of science. Because what you are pursuing now is doctor of philosophy. Then you need to do doctor of science, which is in Polish, habilitacja. Then you need to work more, publish more, accomplish a position, and then you will apply for professorship. Yes, an important thing is to keep publishing, having good ideas, and become known by people, because people who will be reviewing your application, they need to know who you are, they need to have a good idea of what you do. So, a roadmap. He was not that specific. I think he also said that it doesn't have to be very specific, but it has to be concrete, and you need to find out how to get there. A very important idea, finding out how to get there. Drawing yourself a roadmap, what are the intermediate points, how do I accomplish that? So it's not just a dream, it's becoming something concrete. Have a vision, and that's also very important, I think. Have a vision, so something that you imagine. There were sayings, I think, Bill Gates or maybe Steve Jobs. If you can imagine something, you can accomplish it also, right? So having a vision is a very important thing. You have to know what you want. If you don't know what you want, then every destination will look like a success. That's a very sad thing. Wherever you get, wherever the winds will bring you, it will look like a success without a vision. So the vision is important. Again, doesn't have to be very concrete. Doesn't have to be like, I'm going to get a Nobel Prize. Even though it's an okay thing, it's a great a goal, but it doesn't have to be that concrete. A good less concrete vision would be, I want to be a good scientist. I want people to know how to spell my name correctly. In my case, it's of course not that easy, right, for foreigners to spell my name correctly. So that's when will they know how to spell it correctly? When they read some of my papers, they are impressed, and they will recognize my name. So it can be like this. You want to be a good scientist, known scientist. He also said, think big. So aim really very high. There was, I couldn't agree with this more, and that idea was posed to me by a priest, a parish priest in my parish in Lublin, where I grew up. I was an altar boy, ministrant, altar boy, and so I knew the priests. So when they came to visit the family in January, they would stay a little bit longer in the apartment of my parents. Not terribly long, but 5 or 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes. My mother would make tea. She was always prepared with some cake. So the priest would chat a little bit. Since I was an altar boy, they knew me. Maybe they also liked me. So one of the priests, I may show you his picture later in one of the lectures, he told me, Marek, you have to aim high. Exactly what he said. And he actually explained to me that when you shoot with a gun, the curve that is drawn by the projectile goes up straight, and then it starts curving, and it curves and then falls somewhere there. So if I want to get here, I cannot just aim at that thing. If I aim at that thing, I will not get there. I need to aim higher to get there. So he said, he literally said that, if you want to become a garbage pickup man, for example, he didn't think very highly of me, I guess. you have to aim at becoming the director of the garbage pickup company. So you aim high, and then the curve goes down, and you end up where you really want it to. I actually took it to heart. I thought it was a good advice, and I always I like speaking to older people and collecting advice. So I was really aiming high. The problem is that my curve typically didn't really go down too much, which was good. I'm not complaining, but if you know where you are going, you aim high, you also will get high. And that is what Olden advises you. National Academy of Science, there is something comparable in Poland as well, or wherever you will end up being. Some of you will emigrate, at least maybe for some time, come back. So think big. Think global also. Nobel Prize is a very global thing. Maybe not the Peace Prize, which has devaluated terribly, but prizes in different disciplines are it's thinking big. There's no Nobel Prize in informatics, but in computer science, but there is in physics, not mathematics. But you can get close enough with your research to one of the disciplines that give Nobel Prizes and get it also. You can make contributions to medicine by designing some apparatus software or something that makes it a big impact. So think big. I really think it's a good advice also. The next thing is, I had some introductions to that by Herb Simon, but I still think that in his explanation, that idea was also very important. And it was somewhat new, the way he described it. So ask important questions in science. We talked about this in the context of finding a research question, remember? Think about the utility of the answer. Will people be interested in, will anybody care in the answer? So he's saying the same thing, saying ask important questions. What are important questions? Now, important questions are those that make the biggest impact in the world and that people are interested in. If you find cure for cancer, boy, that's an important thing. You'll get the attention of many people. And in every field, there are those important questions. Remember the movie
the race to catch the buckyballs, it was an important question, the new form of carbon. That's an important question. People would definitely care. So he said, don't worry, don't focus on the small things, just ask important questions. And then he also said, have a list of important questions, order them in the order of importance, and address the first few, the first three on the list. That's literally what he advised. Simon would say in this context that it takes just as much work to work on a boring question as it takes to work on an important question. So why would you waste your time on a boring question? Always think about the utility and importance and work on that. That next thing, I heard it, of course, in probably many contexts before, but in this lecture, that was somewhat new for me. Not being afraid to challenge the accepted truths. Sometimes people believe that this is the way, and they can be wrong. And it's never the majority that it's not always that the majority is right. You have figured that out already, I think. Sometimes a minority, a single person, may be right. My favorite example is Albert Einstein. You know that his theory didn't make much sense to people because, relative? You don't observe it normally. So in 1933, there was a book published in Germany titled 100 Autoren gegen Einstein, 100 Authors Against Einstein. And it was like, you know, it's like in a political discourse in Poland. They ask some actor, what do you call it in Polish? Celebrita in English. Celebrity. You ask them, what do you think about this and this political issue? That's, of course, a ridiculous idea. Why would that celebrity know more about some important political issue than somebody else? So you have some actors, you know, expressing their opinion. Of course, a ridiculous idea. Among the 100 authors, there were really 100 authors, short essays explaining why Einstein is wrong. So it's almost like Olbrichsky writing, you know, why Einstein is wrong. Why would I be interested in what Olbrichsky has to say about Einstein, right? I may want to hear what he wants to say about acting. That's fine, right? But so there were 100 people explaining why they think Einstein is wrong. And there were all kinds of people, scientists included. They say that it wasn't really, it was 1933 Germany, but it wasn't, the goal wasn't being anti-Semitic, apparently, because there were also Jewish people among the authors. In any case, 100 people explaining how Einstein is wrong. When Einstein heard it, he said, okay, I understand it, but why 100? If I were wrong, one would have been enough. Yes? So he essentially, you know, he had a very new way of looking at physics, at what is happening in the world. He was a brilliant fellow. He was fairly convinced about what he conceived. He wasn't scared of the majority. Of course, it took some time before people accepted his theory, but majority is not always right. Sometimes majority is right, but not always. So don't be afraid to question the accepted truths. As a scientist, it's your duty, actually, to use your own brain, and people think this is the way. Why? What is happening? Why? Maybe that's not true. In fact, every time you hear something, you should try to reconcile it with your knowledge. If it's not consistent with your knowledge, then ask questions. Ask the speaker questions. Very often speakers are intimidating. They will say, well, I explained it. I could talk about it for hours to explain you. This is true, right? Grünbaum, I remember, one of my mentors, he had a couple of sayings that he taught in lectures, because he often was against the current. I may have mentioned that he worked on the structure of time. He was a philosopher of science, so physics, right? Structure of time, the nature of time. The second thing was Freud, psychoanalysis, where the world was Freudian. You know, people supported Freud. He was kind of going against it. The third was philosophy and religion. That I don't think he, again, I'm not sure how successful he was in convincing people to be atheists. He didn't convince me anyway. In any case, he would say that when sometimes people try to intimidate you. So when he sits in the audience, when he hears, for example, be open-minded, you hear it sometimes, yes? People trying to explain you that having sex with children is all right. Be open-minded to it. Grunbaum would say, well, I'm open-minded. My mind is open, but not so open that my brains will fall out, right? That's a good answer. If you disagree with something strongly, you know, you can say that. Don't get intimidated by, you know, oh, you are so old-fashioned, you know. Your mind is not open, yes? Another thing that he would say in situations like when people would show you some theory, some, you know, formulas, and not explain you the intuition, and you feel that there is something fishy there, he would ask a question, he would ask another question. One of his character feature that I really, I tried to learn it, and I think I did learn it in a large degree, is being persistent. In Polish, you could even say, in a slightly negative way, upierdliwy. So he wouldn't take an answer just, you know, for an answer. He would want to know why and keep asking. So if he asked two or three times and the speaker still didn't provide an answer, there's another saying that he said, that he used. When people would say, that's a complicated matter, I could, you know, I could speak for a long time about this, very complicated. Grunbaum would say, okay, I'm sitting comfortably, I have time, why don't you start explaining, right? That's another thing. And I've never used it, although I was kind of close, I used maybe similar things, with this being persistent. The third thing he would say in a talk, when somebody tried to intimidate with formulas and, you know, trying to darken the picture, ściemniać, he would say, I'm sorry, I still don't understand it, and I'm not modest enough to think it's my fault. So, you know, again, not very polite, but sometimes people deserve it, really, you know, when they try to put something in your head without proper justification. In the context of religion, he didn't make me an atheist, I'm still very religious, but he would he got interested in that, I think, when he was still a young man. One of the rabbis, because he was Jewish, would tell him in a you know, the lessons on we could call it Sunday school. The rabbi told him, "You are so stupid that nothing will ever come out of you." That's not a nice thing to say to a child, I guess, but he took it very personally. So one of the things he made me definitely more aware of the, you know, the truths that sometimes people want to intimidate us with. Sometimes a priest will say, God wants us this, to do this and that. Okay, Grunbaum would ask, okay, how do you know? Did you talk to God? Well, that sounds very hard, of course, very harsh, but... But if you listen to it carefully, sometimes I hear, I don't ask that in the middle of the sermon in the church, of course, but sometimes you hear things that are, you know, how do they know that? You know, aren't they inventing it? Aren't they using their human, you know, human way of thinking to invent things? Yes? So he made me definitely more aware of that. But in any case, anyway, in the context of science, all of these anecdotes are to kind of strengthen this. Don't hesitate to challenge the accepted truths. And he gave an example. When he was working in biology, I forgot what the topic was. The whole world thought that something was going one way or another because a Nobel Prize winner, in his speech, when he was asked about this, he said, I think that this is happening. So everybody thought that this was the way, because the Nobel Prize winner said that. He and his group have proven that it's wrong, actually. So in that sense, he was not hesitating to challenge the accepted truths. And I think it's a good attitude in all respects, not only in science, but also, whatever, in religion, in politics, in your friendships. You know, just try to find out what is going on there. Use, most of all, your senses and evidence, facts. Don't get convinced too easily. Another thing, remember, there's one of the 18th skills is networking. It's a very important thing, and he gave examples of that, several examples in the lecture. You need a network to succeed. I just heard another beautiful quote. I wrote it down somewhere, or I maybe it was a quote by Steve Jobs. If you want to go somewhere fast, you'd better do it alone. But if you want to get further, you need other people. Very good quote. Of course, sometimes you may be annoyed by other people slowing you down. If you have an idea, you want to go fast. But with other people, you get further. And that's a truth, I think, in many areas, not only in science. I don't know if I mentioned, for example, when I read the original report, Auschwitz report by Witold Pilecki. You can find it online in Polish. You can find it also in English. He was several times very close to dying there. And only because he already had a network of people, he was building a resistance network in there in Auschwitz, he survived. Once he had typhoid, I think. He was almost dead. It's only that people, his friends, his colleagues, saved him from dying. So that happened several times. In science, the same thing. He gave many examples. You need a network. Find out who are the movers and shakers, important people in the community, and make sure that they know who you are. Why is it important? Well, suppose you are, you send a paper to review. It's better when people know who you are, your name. They've seen other works of yours. Maybe they've seen you talk in a conference. Maybe they already know who you are. He was doing things that I don't do, actually. It's maybe because of my character. He advises, I think it's, maybe this is the point, he advises to speak to those movers and shakers, the important people. I don't do that, really. So, you go to a conference and you see, oh, that is an important person. You start to get close and then, start talking, etc., etc. That is, to my taste, a little bit close to brown nosing. You know this expression, brown nosing? Brown nosing is vaseliniarstwo. Brown nosing because you put your nose so deep up somebody's behind that it becomes brown, I think. This is the origin of that expression. So I haven't done that, I have to say. I do talk to people. I love people, but I just talk to the people who are around me. And that's also, I think, important, because those people at my stage of development or younger, whoever I talk to, they are, in 10 years from now, they are going to be much further ahead, and they will still remember me. The way people, you can recognize the true nature of people by how they treat people who they perceive are lower on the social ladder. I dislike immensely people who are treating those lower to them badly, and then they treat those higher very nicely, like they open the door, they grab the bag to carry for them just because they are higher in the hierarchy. I don't like that, and I strongly suspect that nobody likes it. When you see your colleague doing this, you probably start disliking that colleague. So I haven't done that. Although I haven't escaped from talking to important people if they happen to be around me, but I'm just not seeking just them. I talk to whoever I can. So that's a different thing that I'm doing. But I'm not saying that this is a bad approach. It's just that I haven't done that. So he finds the important people and he makes sure that they learn who they are. Of course, that's a risky thing, he said. I think he said it in this context. Because suppose there is an important person giving a lecture, right, talking about things. And then you, after the lecture, you come to that person and start talking. The risk is that if you have nothing to say, they may remember your name and your face, but in a very bad context. That person doesn't know what he's talking about, right? So he said there is a risk. So if you approach people, you'd better make a good impression. What's the easiest way of making good impression? Being good, yes. Because if you try to make a good impression, but you are not that good, then you're going to look funny. You have to always stand on solid grounds. Another advice, he said, is don't arrive too soon. So the typical way that a scientist, the career path that a scientist takes in US, but not only in US, is you finish a doctorate and then you spend a few years working as a postdoc. So essentially, with a doctorate, you take a position that is not terribly well paid. You earn more than the stipend, but it's not a very, very good, nice salary. And you do it for 2, 3, 4 years, depends. But you try to do it at a very, very good place. So you go to Harvard, you go to Oxford, Cambridge, and the goal is to learn more. What you are learning now as a doctoral student, it's just the first steps. You keep learning, and you learn from the best people, so you go to the best places. That's the postdoc position. He said he took several postdoc positions at very good places. I think he went to, was it Harvard? I think it was Harvard that he went to. And he knew that he would not get a permanent position at Harvard because Harvard is known to very rarely give a permanent position. They are so famous, so prestigious, that they have many people who want to be there so they can pick and choose. So he knew he would not get a permanent position, but he didn't care about the permanence, about the safety. There will be time for that. So he said, don't arrive too soon, because if you arrive too soon, you are already a professor, faculty member, maybe it's too early, you haven't learned enough. So he said, study, invest in yourself. That's not a typical way in Poland, I think, but there may be equivalents of that. What I would advise you, if you were my children, I would advise you that. Once you get your doctorate, if you are serious about becoming a scientist, try to get a position at some very good place abroad. Write your dissertation in English. That's going to make it easier for you to write publications because it's the same language that you will be using to write publications. Write it in English, publish your work, make sure that it's good work, and then send your applications to the best places in the world. The best places, I would think, in terms of scientific training, are some top universities in US, maybe top universities in England. Oxford, Cambridge have very good reputation. Maybe Switzerland, technical universities, ETH, Technische Hochschule, and E is, what is E? I forgot what it is. But anyway, ETH is in Zurich, in Switzerland. There's probably something in Austria, something in Sweden, Linköping is quite well known. So, you know, there are several very good places. Go there, spend a couple of years, 2, 3 years. At this point, there is still a difference in your earnings. They will be smaller and smaller, of course, but there is still, so maybe you can save some money. You come back to buy your apartment or something. But anyway, get some experience, go somewhere, and then start working at a university here in Poland. Go, come back, definitely. That's my advice also, come back. But go, don't feel restricted. You know English, you are investing more and more in English. You are writing in English, so it's actually, you are already part of that global scientific network. Sometimes it's difficult, of course, because of family commitments. Some of you have already families, it's more difficult, but maybe your spouse will be willing to make a sacrifice to spend a few years abroad with you. That's also a possibility. I had family when I was a doctoral student already. I had third son was born the moment I was defending my dissertation, third. I have four sons. So definitely learn as much as you can. Compare yourself to the best, against the best. He gives an example of car manufacturers in US. He said that one of the manufacturers is comparing itself to Toyota, and it's also doing the best in US. US cars are so-so. Americans don't buy American cars. That's a good heuristic rule, I think. There may be exceptions, but they're not that great. So in US, many people drive Japanese cars. They're just better quality. They brake less. I don't know what the situation is now, but definitely they were. Tesla is great. It's an American car, of course. But anyway, they compared to Toyota, and they were also doing better. This was probably Mazda. Compared to Mazda. But this was Ford. Ford compared itself to Mazda. It was doing a little better than the General Motors. So compare yourself to the best. So don't be happy that you are better than your colleague who is average, but look at your colleagues who are the best. And if you are not there yet, try to do everything to catch up, to be that good too. Compare yourself to the best. Good idea, I think. Role models, so these are typically your mentors, your older scientists that you are impressed by and think, okay, I'd like to be like that person. I'd like to achieve what that person has achieved. If you don't find that such role models around you, well, look wider. Look at, you will meet some people at conferences. You can talk to them. Scientists are very approachable, really. They are not people who will tell you, I don't have time for you. Scientists, for many reasons, I think. One of them may be vanity. It's really flattering to, you are in a conference and some young person comes to ask questions. That's flattering. Am I so wise that I can, they are interested in my answers? But that's not the main thing. I think the main thing is that people who work at universities, who want to work at universities, they have some idealism in them. They want to transfer their knowledge. So they actually like talking. It's very rare that people refuse to talk to you. You send them email, you call them, can I come, can I talk to you? Most of the time they will be willing to do it. So you need to realize that, and probably you do realize that. So when you meet people who are impressive in conferences, in other universities or abroad at conferences, talk to them. You can even ask them over lunch, over coffee, how did you do this, how did you do that, what was the path for you to become a member of the National Academy of Science or getting Nobel Prize. They will gladly tell you that. It's amazing. All of my mentors, you saw the picture in the first meeting, all of them were like this. None of them would tell you, no, I'm not going to talk to you. Grunbaum, I just mentioned him, he was a great teacher. We were so different. He was, when he died, he was 96, and I kept in touch with him until his death. I was then maybe 60 when he died, yes, so big age difference. But he was a great teacher in the sense that he would always take the time to explain you things, to teach you something. That's a great feature, and I think you will see it in many, many people in universities. Why do they do that? I think it's just idealism. They are very happy to transfer their knowledge to teach other people. Use it to get to know those role models, emulate them. planning, good idea. I had been planning, I think, maybe a little bit shorter distance. Kind of, I had vision, definitely, before I heard his talk. I knew what I wanted, roughly. But I was planning typically one semester, 1 year. And it's a good advice to plan. Look ahead and where you want to be. What do you want to accomplish this semester, this year? For you, the horizon definitely is finishing your PhD, definitely. I would plan. You have 3 years and a little bit to finish your PhD. Plan where you want to be next year, 2 years from now. You don't want to be in your fourth year and with your dissertation not ready. You don't want to be there. Because that would mean that you will have to finish your dissertation while not getting the stipend, doing some other things which will distract you from your research. Or some may actually fail in the sense, okay, I haven't finished, there's no way I can finish. That's a sad position to be in. So plan so that you know where you want to be on the way. He was advising planning 5 to 7 years ahead and then pausing once in a while and recalibrating, changing the exact direction, next steps. As far as I know, it's not because of the quality of the lecture. I think he told me that he was leaving. A couple of people have to leave earlier. So I think it's a good idea, planning. Definitely, I stand behind it. He also advised not to take too many directions at the same time. So remember, he said, take the top three. When you are working on your dissertation, you can still take 2-3 and make each of them become a publication. Then a publication that is consistent with your dissertation so that you can make it a chapter in your dissertation. So 2-3 is fine, not too many, because you want to be really focused, especially at this stage, when you are learning, when you want to produce a dissertation. So this is more, it's a good advice definitely for you. But when you are further, say 10 years from now, 3 at the same time is okay. Especially given that some of that is going to be done, a lot of work is going to be done by your students. So you just supervise them. Supervising does not take as much time as actually doing the work. This is important, I think, definitely in the context of the global science. Never accept a job offer that is not more prestigious than the previous one. I see it sometimes in our former students, I mean engineers and master students, and not doctoral students. I haven't followed too many doctoral students from here so far. But they go out, finish their studies, they get a job, and then they find out that they can get 1,000 zloty more in another position, so they change it. And then somebody else is paying more, they change it again. So very often they are pursuing the money. Money is not that important in the long, long run. Especially for a scientist, money and safety are not that important. The important things are learning as much as possible and then building your reputation, your prestige, getting really good work done. This is higher priority. So when you get a new position, don't go to a place that is worse than your current position, even if they offer you more money or whatever, permanence. Just go to a not very well-paid position, but prestigious. Like he was talking that in the context of Harvard, he had a family, he had children, his wife was luckily understanding. She was willing to spend a few more years making the ends meet, which is tying, living at a lower standard, but he was learning. He gives an example of a colleague, also a black colleague. There are still quite strong racial tensions in US, much stronger than in Europe, even though in Europe they're also there, and definitely much stronger than in Poland. So that guy wanted to get a permanent position. He accepted an offer where he went to, and then Alden says, that they liquidated the department or the group. He was essentially on the street, without a permanent position, and then without the knowledge that he could, the skill that he could have developed by staying longer in a less permanent position. I think it's a good idea, definitely, for scientists. If you have just ambitions of making a living, having an average career, just improving your salary, okay, that's fine. But if you want to become a good, well-known scientist, absolutely a good idea, I think. Vision. The example he gives is that is of football players, the American football, of course, similar to rugby. But you can think about it in the context of soccer, which is the European football. He said that it's a good idea to know where the ball is going to be, not where it is now. You don't run after the ball, but you run to the place where the ball is going to be next. The same in science. So think about things that are going to be important soon. Not today, but soon. I also think that that advice is also good in the context of just planning your life, not just science. There are certain things that are fashions, fads, fashions. And if you feel that they are not good, don't follow them, don't do that. It's almost like dressing yourself according to to some experts who are saying this is fashionable this spring. I always found it a ridiculous idea. I always try to wear clothes that never go out of fashion. Maybe they are not most fashionable, but never go out of fashion. You don't have to have the newest model of the phone. You don't need to have the newest model of the computer. Critique of those people following fashion. If you read, I think it's in Pantadeusz, in our national, one of those famous pieces of literary work, I think Mickiewicz is also criticizing that, people who are following the fashions. And we had also plays, Żona Modna, I think, is the example. Who wrote that? I forgot. We had it as one of the compulsory readings in high school, I think. So that is applicable also in your life, because when you follow fashion, or not only in terms of clothes but other things, what you end up with is things that you no longer like a year or 2 years from now. Maybe some of your behavior. You follow the fashion of making a tattoo. 3 years, 5 years from now, you may regret it, because every time you put a skirt that is short sleeves, everybody will be admiring your fashions that are no longer fashionable, and et cetera, et cetera. So in science, definitely, it's a good idea to know where the things are going to. That's very consistent with finding research topics, if you remember. You are looking for research topics not in the journals, not in the things that are fashionable right now, things that are happening right now, but somewhere else. Because you may open up a new line of research. So very, very consistent with that. Don't follow the crowd. That's a great advice that I've been giving long before I heard Alden. When I was a child, I always was interested in fishing, so I was at a lake close to Lublin, and of course, as a child, I didn't have good equipment, so my hook was like that, very big, and the fish were like that. They were, in Polish, ukleja, a very small fish that is popular in the lakes. So I would throw a piece of bread, and they would start attacking it, eating like a fish, feeding frenzy. How do you catch a fish like this with a hook like that? Create essentially a feeding frenzy when they are following each other because there is food, then they are less careful. You throw them a piece of bread, big piece of bread, they are starting attacking it, and then you throw the hook with a small piece of bread. And indeed, I caught a couple of them, miraculously, because they were so thoughtless. They were just following the crowd of other fish.
The same happens with people. Everybody is buying apartments now because, you know, the prices are going up and up. Everybody is buying. And then suddenly, boom, and the prices are going down. Isn't that happening? I just read in Łódź, I think, the prices of the real estate are going down or went down.
In all the cities.
All the cities even, yes? Okay, so that happens also. So think about where the prices of the apartments are going to be 5 years from now, not where they are now, right? In investment, in all decisions, it's a good idea. This is so consistent with Simon. By the time you will have learned the problem, people will have solved it and nobody will be interested in it. So we have to know where things are going. Have the courage to challenge things and change them. Of course, things that can be changed. There is this prayer, I think I read. It's a prayer, but of course it's a good advice also. God, help me to accept things I cannot change. Give me the strength to change the things that can be changed, and also wisdom to distinguish between the two. Things that you can change, things that you cannot change. Yes, that's a big thing. If you can change, sometimes people think, no, you cannot change them, but you have to use your brain, of course. Can you change it or not? If you can change, have the courage to change that. There are so many examples that actually things that many people think you cannot change, but you can change. I always disliked the University of Pittsburgh, but you could find many examples here also. Sometimes I heard an administrative person or maybe a faculty colleague say, oh, yeah, well, things here at Pitt, University of Pittsburgh, things are just screwed up hopelessly. You cannot fix that. I always got angry about that because you can change small things. Here in Poland, and definitely in our university, one of the things that is just terrible is the administrative overhead, signatures, stamps, paperwork. And I always find it very upsetting when people say, oh, you know, it's RODO, it's, it's the Union, European Union, etc. This is ridiculous. I lived in a country that is one of the old European Union countries, Netherlands. Sorry, Gregory, there was not as much paperwork as there is here. It's all a decision of the highest local authorities. A department chair can reduce the paperwork, rector can reduce the paperwork, and the prime minister can reduce the paperwork, the minister. It can be done. I think so. But if you ask people, they will tell you, oh, that's European Union, or that's RODO. We cannot do that because that's RODO, yes? Which is often ridiculous. And I have sometimes, at least once, I have fought that and I won. So you can change that. You just, every time in our faculty meeting where there is a proposal to have another piece of paper, I vote against it. Of course, I express why. It's not necessary. I vote against it. But also the same thing with the doctoral school also. There is also paperwork that I find sometimes unnecessary. It's a very hard battle because a lot of people are really used to that. So very hard. What can I do? I explain the reason why I'm voting against it. I vote against it. But these things can be changed and they have to be changed. So you have to have the courage. Of course, in science, challenging some truths is important. Be perceived as a playmaker. Playmaker is, I think they have it in Polish, rozgrywający. It's the person who, in the field, who decides how we are going to attack or defend. Yes, it's the person who decides where to kick the ball. And you have to be perceived as a playmaker, as somebody who is able to actually say, we are going there, we are going there. It's very important. There is a movie one of my favorite movies, made by Mel Gibson,
We Were Soldiers. If you haven't seen it, maybe a good entertainment, if you like war movies. It's a battle in Vietnam, during the war in Vietnam. American soldiers are for the first time fighting the North Vietnam army. So they are not guerrillas, they are not Viet Cong, but this is an army, two armies opposing each other. In the movie, in the beginning, there is basic training in the army. So the soldiers, the young officers are training, they are running, you know, all kinds of things. There is something that is in that movie that is happening everywhere. The two officers, Colonel Hal Moore, author of the book on which based the movie is based, and his drill sergeant, they are watching the young officers and discussing them. Oh, this guy, he wants to win medals. He is a good leader. Why are they doing this? They want to pick the best of them to be promoted. The same thing is done in every organization. The same thing is done in this university. In any group that is led by somebody with a brain, it's again. I knew that she was going to. But looks very demoralizing, like people are living in the middle of the. So thank you for telling me that. There's, I think, one more person who said that he's going. Anyway, you always look for the best people. Why? Because you want the best people to be on your team. Very, very important when you, for example, are a coach, you want to have the best players. You get people from different countries, as you know. There are people who are playing in Jagiellonia, I think, who are foreigners also. Why are they playing in Jagiellonia? Because they are very good. Why are they? How were they hired? They were being observed by the coach and picked as good potential players. So everybody is or should look at the best people. And it's very important for you, when you develop your career, to be perceived as a good material for a leader, for a good scientist. How do you do that? Well, it's not that you just smile or dress differently. No, you have to take initiative. Show the best of you. Be perceived as somebody who knows what to do when time comes. And then a few things about career planning. Don't wait for your lifetime topic. That's actually not terribly applicable to you, because you all have topics when you enter this school. It's quite unusual, actually, in doctoral schools that people know what to do in the first semester. Quite unusual. I'm not saying worse or better. It's okay, but I would like it that it's easier to change that. So if you suddenly realize you don't like it, you change it. It's very difficult in our school to do that, to change your topic. In general, it's a bad idea to wait, although sometimes, of course, there are exceptions. If you watch the movie Beautiful Mind about John Nash, he was doing that. He was waiting and waiting for a topic. For the first 1 or 2 years of his doctoral studies, he didn't know what to do yet. And then he found the topic, solved it very quickly, and then later got Nobel Prize for it. But that's an exception. It's a very, very, very risky path. I would advise you, don't take it, even though you may succeed. It's a risky path. The odds are against you. Hanging around for 4 years, in this case 4 years, will not give you a PhD. So forget about it. Taking courses, getting grades, passing them will not get you a PhD. So you coming to this course, to this seminar, I'm taking presence because I'm supposed to, yes. It's unimportant. The most important thing in this in being here is learning a couple of things each week. If you learn a couple of things each week, then you have done your job. I mean, you've used it, you learned it.
But the most important thing is developing your research program. So doing research and publishing it. So be aggressive in pushing that and get your mentor on board, so helping you to do that. Freedom of choice is an illusion in this context because you have already picked an advisor. It would be very, very unwise to do things that the advisor is not good at. So you should try to use all the resources around you that are possible. Your advisor, most of all, but other things. The moment you enter this university, whatever department here, you are already limited in your choices. Limited maybe also by the rules, but most of all because it would be unwise to do other things than the things that people are good at here. So it's an illusion. You have already made a commitment. You should stick to it. No TV, no newspapers, no news groups, web surfing, social media. Cut it out completely, because that will give you additional, whatever, a few hours extra each week that you can spend on something much, much better, much wiser. I was given that advice when there was TV and newspapers. Actually, I haven't had a TV for more than 50 years, and I've never read newspapers, really. I mean, sometimes I would grab, but never regularly. That was a big time saver. Social media, I only accept invitations, but I never send invitations to join people. Role models are important, but also be careful whom you are listening to. Because people say different things, you make a judgment. Just don't buy everything. If Daniel Olbrychsky, sorry, Mr. Olbrychsky, but I heard him say wise things about politics. If he is talking and giving you advice on your research area, ignore it. The best thing. So what I want to say is, be careful who you are listening to, people who know what they are talking about. Get involved as soon as possible. You are doing this. Well, that's also not applicable. Sometimes in U.S. universities, people change their advisors, go to different groups. While it's, you know, people should pick a topic that they really like, it often goes together with wasting time. So I definitely advise against that. You can do it, but not too often. It's almost like getting married. Compare the working on your dissertation with your advisor as a temporary kind of, not really marriage, but kind of temporary relationship. Okay, it's okay to have a few girlfriends, boyfriends before that, other advisors, yes. But if you have too many, that doesn't look too good, does it? If you had 10 fiancés before you got married, that's kind of, people will start looking at you, well, can this person be satisfied at all, yes? Definitely it's okay to get to know other people before you commit to marry, but not too many, yes, that's what I want to say. I gave this advice in Pittsburgh, and I definitely give it here. If you can afford not to work, stop working. Focus on your dissertation. If you want to do a good job, if you want to educate yourself as a scientist, you have much more time than that. I haven't admitted a doctoral student working outside of the university for the last 8 years or so, almost 30 years. I had some experiences in the beginning. They didn't work out. Well, I actually did that here in Białystok. I think I had one or two doctoral students. They were working. Nothing came out of it. Sorry, they didn't have time for that, for their development. So I just say, if you want to work with me, you don't work. You just quit your job. Working hard. There is a baseline of 80 hours a week work, and that sounds terrible, right? 80 hours a week, that's two full-time jobs. I don't mean sitting at your desk for 80 hours, no. I mean mentally being involved. So
riding a your bicycle to work, taking shower, you are so emotionally involved in what you are doing that you're also thinking about it. Sometimes you even sleep, you have a dream about it. So that's what the 80 hours are. 80 hours, it will quickly become 80 hours. It's 6 days a week. 80 divided by 6, what, 12 or something? Easy, yes? 12 hours working a day. Of course, having lunch with your colleagues from your lab and talking about work, that's also working, really. So it's not... why 80 hours? There was a research in psychology on... it's called psychology of expertise. They studied different people who achieved success in different fields. Sports people, chess women, mathematicians, actors, whatever disciplines there are, sports. And there were three common things, I think, if I remember, among them. They were all workaholics, so they worked a long, long time. The second thing, they worked usually like 80 hours a week, roughly, yes, with some exceptions. Some of them who are smarter maybe worked 75. Some of them who had to catch up 85, yes, so small differences. And the third thing, it took them around 10 years to achieve expertise, to become really good at what they were doing. Mozart composed at the age of 6, but his masterpieces... he wrote when he was 15. Yes, so. And he was a workaholic. He worked himself to death. Right? I don't advise that, by the way. You should have things outside that allow you to recharge the batteries. Courses and exams are completely unimportant. The important is knowledge. So, like here, you know, just be there and look for good ideas for you, not for me, for you in this course. Choosing an advisor, okay, irrelevant for you. But anyway, choosing an advisor, that's before you apply, it's asking questions like, is it a good scientist? Does he or she have a good track record in publications and funding and graduating students? Have there been any problems with interaction? Things like that usually you can learn from other people. Have there been problems? It's always memory of that in the... organization. Research style, can I think of that person as a role model? Will my advisor have enough time for me? That's also important. You should have at least once a week a meeting of 1 hour. That's a minimum that you should get from your advisor. If the advisor cancels meetings because he or she is traveling, doesn't have time for you, that's asking for trouble, for problems, because you are going to be on your own. So not a good sign. Can I get along with that person personally? It happens that, two different personalities, you still can make it work out, but it's harder. So just personal interaction, is it okay? Is the research area something that you want to get into? And I think it's actually maybe even less important than the other questions. The other questions are maybe even more important. Money, no problem here, you have all stipends. Money in many places come from grants, so does the advisor have money to pay me? Then learn as much as possible from that person, and in this environment they will not mind at all that you steal knowledge from them. They will love it. The selection committee, the advisor will help you a lot with that when you are... Actually, there's not that much. You actually send your dissertation to the reviewers, and the reviewers are selected by the department council, I think. But the advisor can help with that, can suggest some, definitely. So that's maybe a different way that it works here than it works in the advisor will have to watch out that there are no fundamental scientific disagreements between your work, the advisor's work, and that those people, no personal animosities. They should be also reasonable. Quick turnaround and no unreasonable problems, questions. It's
this in Poland, I think it's 3 reviewers of your dissertation. So that's not, that slide is not that important for you. Concluding, planning is very important and effective. Find time for planning. This is the million dollars advice. Once a year, December 31st, think about what you are going to do next year. Once a month, 30th of the month, think about the next month, what you are going to do. Once a semester, what you are going to accomplish in the semester. Once a week, Sunday night, look at your calendar, what you are going to do this week. Planning, very, very important, I think, very effective. Be careful who you are listening to, definitely. Role models help. We learn the quickest, the best from other people. And that's it about all that. And there is another, there were two other movies that I recommended to you. And one of them is a lecture by Randy Pouch. What I want to do is I want to show you a few slides, at least today, from Randy Pausch's talk. I really have a few slides. So I'll just stress a few things, nine slides, very, very few. Definitely, if you haven't watched it, because it's worth watching, I think. There are other things in addition to good advice about career planning. So here is Randy Pausch. He died in 2008, I think. Okay, the lecture was 2007. There is a series of lectures at Carnegie Mellon Computer Science Department called The Last Lecture. That's actually a title of the series. They don't advise people who are going to die always, but what they do is they invite people they want to listen to, people who have accomplished something, and they tell them, pick a topic yourself. Whatever you want to talk about, you can talk about. Pick a topic as if this was your last lecture in your life. That's the invitation, typically. They invited him, and this was one of the last lectures because he was he had a terminal cancer, pancreas, I think, that he was going to die. And in fact, they gave him a few months of life. He lived longer than they gave him, but he was dying. So he picked the topic, Achieving Your Childhood Dreams, and he's talking about his career in a very open way. I believe he's telling the truth, his real feelings and how he organized his career and what he thinks is important. It's a very good lecture because people who are at the deathbed, they are going to die, they have no reason whatsoever to lie, to make it more beautiful. I think he just said what he thought. So it's really very, very much worth listening. If you watched that lecture towards the end, there are some people in the audience. Some of them you saw on my picture probably in the first meeting, some of the mentors I'm thankful to. Dream and don't be afraid to live your dream. Many people say that if you can dream something, then you can achieve it. Very, very important idea. Make sure that your children have a good childhood. It's amazing how often children can be harmed by toxic parents. So make sure that children have good childhood because that will make it easier for them later in life. They should be loved. This one I liked. Brick walls. In Polish we say, there's a saying, Głową muru nie przebijesz. You will not break the wall with your head. In English there is a saying, this is a brick wall. I cannot go further because that's the end. I cannot go further. So here he said, brick walls in your life are for you to show how much you want something. If you want something very much, of course you will find a way. Under, above, to the side, you'll go through that. Yes? If you really want something. When people ask him how he succeeded, and he was quite successful, I knew him. He may not have remembered my name, but I knew him because I listened to a few lectures that he gave. Once there was a breakfast lecture for Carnegie Mellon alumni. There was like 10 people. He talked about creativity, I think. So I knew him.
And sometimes people ask him, how did you succeed? So he answered, well, if you want me to tell you how to succeed, see me in my office at 9 p.m. on Friday night. You see, these are the 80 hours a week. Friday night, everybody's having parties or drinks. He was at work very often. And that's an important thing, hard work. You need something that motivates you, and you heard it also from Simon. Having a mentor is a good idea. He gives an example of a mentor. He was in trouble once. His new course, the project, first assignment, he was blown off his feet by what the students have done. He didn't know what to do. He was ready to give them passing grade A's for what they've done. So he called his mentor, what would you do? And the mentor told him, if you tell them they were very good, they are passing, you will harm them. Setting any kind of level, any expectation will harm those students. So he advised him to go to the class and say, you've done really good work. I'm really happy. I'm very pleased with what you have done. But I know you can do more. Very, very good advice. And it comes with experience, this kind of advice. It's a good idea to have a mentor. When you have graduated, make sure that your advisor is, that you have that relationship with your advisor, so that you can call the advisor and ask, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? I've been very lucky. My advisor, the one that's still alive, whenever I went, he moved to the West Coast, to San Francisco area. Whenever I was in the area, I would want to see him. We had dinner. He started by paying for the dinner, and then at some point said, I'm paying for the dinner. I'm grown up now. But anyway, every time I was there, I would see him. Okay, so I see him quite regularly, I would say.
Sorry, I have one more remark.
Yes?
I suppose that the idea of being for alcoholic is in contradiction to, making sure that your children have a good childhood.
It's a very difficult thing to combine, I agree with you. But I think you can still do it. My children were trilingual. The mother was speaking Dutch to them, I was speaking Polish, and they were learning English at school. I was a doctoral student working 80 hours a week. They spoke fluent Polish. What does it tell you? That I spent time with them, right? Yes, you can do it. How did I do it? Well, I would wake up 7 o'clock, they wake up first, I would have breakfast with them, we would chat. I always made sure that they never saw me looking at the watch and hurrying them up. Just always smiling, answering questions, so quality time. Then we would go together to the daycare. One was sitting on my bicycle, there was a chair in the back. One was walking. There was two of them were young when I was a doctoral student. The third was born when I was graduating. And then I would bring them there, never hurried with leaving, but kind of in the beginning they didn't want to, but then the moment they went there, they said, bye, Daddy. And then I would pick them up often, 5 o'clock or so. Then I would cook dinner with them also. Their mother worked harder than I, more longer hours. Then we would watch a movie together, really quality time. Or we read a book, we would do that too. They loved reading books, sitting on my lap and reading together. So quality time and a lot of collaboration and understanding with your spouse. That's another thing, I think. Hard, you are right, it's not easy, but you can do it. When my children went to bed, I would start working. When your marriage is healthy and you understand each other very well, your husband, your wife, then they are understanding, the marriage will survive. If the marriage is weak, it will not survive that. Because you sacrifice most of all the relationship with your spouse, not with your children. But if you have an understanding spouse, and I know marriages that have survived that, it's worth it, absolutely worth it. I have a good friend who was an academic. We had the same advisor, Simon. And he decided to start a company. He left the university, started a company. For 10, maybe 15 years, he worked very, very hard. Very hard. How his marriage survived? Thanks to his wife, probably. Because he was working probably harder than the faculty. Well, no, then they sold the company for $350 million, I think, dollars. Not everything went to him. He had a partner, and then they had some funding. But, you know, they are wealthy now. What do? They travel. You know, it's been worth it, absolutely. The marriage has survived. They have 3 children. So, hard times. I agree with you. Hard times. Possible to do. There is a conflict, but it is possible to do. Not easy. You have to learn how to deal with administrators. He gives examples of that. Because sometimes administrators think very differently than us, than scientists. They will want to have the papers, the stamps, the things. They will be essentially, they think that their role is to make your life difficult, essentially. And you need to learn how to deal with that. He gives some examples. The way he dealt with the president or provost, you may remember that it's not a good idea to fight with them. He called it a pissing match, I think. Who can piss more on the other person? Yeah, you don't want to be in there. He essentially always tried to avoid it. My approach has always been do first and ask permission later. If you succeed, nobody will ask you the permission. If you ask permission first, they will say, no, you can't do that. So I remember when I started my lab, I created a web page called the Decision Systems Laboratory. The department chair asked me one day, I saw that you created a lab. Yes, I did. That was the end of the conversation, essentially. Can you create a lab? I have no idea. Can you create a lab? In Poland, I think it's more strict. There's laboratory, there has to be a professor, etc. There, I just did it. And the rule, do first, ask permission later, I think it's a good idea. Unless you are involved in politics, then you do good things, and they can start harassing you afterwards, as you see that now. Be generous with people, because you are never alone. The same thing that Alden is saying. Good idea to have colleagues, friends, take care of them, because you are never alone. You will get further when you are with people. Happy childhood, because these are most important things. In fact, he says that in his lecture, that the lecture is actually not for you, he says, it's for my children. Acknowledge others. We will mention that. I mentioned that again when in writing. When you acknowledge people in your papers, it's a good idea to be very generous. Don't be an asshole. I told you that already. I think the monk who was told by the chief monk, you should love your brothers here. It's a Christian order, and my personal advice. Don't make it too difficult for your brothers in the monastery to love you. The same principle. If you are reasonably nice, it's going to be easier for you. If you are perceived as an asshole, dupek in Polish, then it's going to be more difficult for you. People will work against you. They will because they don't like you. That's an interesting idea. If you give people enough time, they will show you their best side. So be patient with your, especially with your students, I guess, when you have students, colleagues. Don't be afraid of failing, otherwise you'll never want to do anything. That's a good advice, I think. Try. Especially when you are young, you can afford to take risks. Even if you fail, you have your whole life to fix it. Being a professor, he says, is like having a cake and eating it. This is a saying in English. You can't have a cake and eat it. There's a Polish equivalent of that. Do you know it? Albo Janek, albo Wianek. You understand that, right? You can't have a cake and eat it. And he says, yeah, because when you are a professor, you can have a cake and you can eat it at the same time. I think he's right here.
learn to appreciate criticism. So when people stop criticizing you, that means that they have given up on you. Because everybody makes mistakes, everybody's work is subject to criticism. If people stop criticizing you, then they gave up on you. Sometimes people, you know, in the age of political correctness, if you say something that is kind of even in part criticizing them, they'll start, you can't say that, it makes me uncomfortable. What do they say still?
It's offensive.
Pardon? It's offensive, yes, yes. I started doing that. When I know somebody is so lefty that that acts like this, when they say something, I do, it is offensive, it makes me uncomfortable. But of course I'm joking, I'm kidding. Being a snowflake, so a person who gets easily insulted, that's a very bad idea. Learn to accept criticism, and when people stop criticizing you, it means that something is terribly wrong, really wrong. That was the end of the lecture. My wife and children mean everything to me. So if we have a dilemma like you ask about, and I'm sure that every one of us has that, because every one of you will have a very close circle of friends. You have family. Currently you may have parents and siblings. Soon, or maybe already, you have spouses and children. These are absolutely the most important things. And people will forget about your academic career a few years after you die, but your family will still keep coming to your grave and lighting candles. That tells you what is more permanent. But also, as a professor, as a scientist, you will also have many intellectual children, remember that. So people that you educate, that you help to become scientists themselves, and these are also almost like a family. You've seen that time. Actually, I showed you all of that. That's it. The third lecture, if you remember, this is a short commencement speech by Steve Jobs. Yes, also worth listening, hearing, because he also tells some really very interesting things. The role of accidents. He also says that, you know, nothing that happens in your life, you can actually make use of everything. Even if your life has been difficult for whatever reasons, you know, we are humans, we all have our own past. My life was not that easy either. And I have to say that at my age, I have come to the conclusion that I don't regret anything. All the things that I had to struggle with in my life made me stronger, made me develop some things. The same Steve Jobs is saying. Very interesting idea. Very good. I don't want to spend to take your time. It's exactly 5:30. Any questions? If not, then we'll meet next week. And I forgot what the next topic is, writing or talking. Anyway, I'll if there's any homework, I'll let you know. Thank you.